You're listening to WMPG and W281AC Gorham, Portland. WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donations and generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
The views expressed on Blunt are those of the individual producers and not those of WMPG, the University of Southern Maine, or any of Blunt's founders and supporters. Blunt Youth Radio welcomes opposing views.
It has to start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve?
To start somewhere. It has to start sometime. What better place than here? What better time than now?
What's your contribution going to be? What problems are you going to solve? What discoveries will you make?
I intend to broadcast from this ship 24 hours a day until the day I die. And then for a couple days after that.
No one's written your destiny for you. You make your own future.
I've always lived for news and weather. Happy to dive into, especially the weather.
Welcome to Blunt Youth Radio. Hey, Isaac.
Yes?
Why did the skeleton go to the dance?
Why?
Because he had no body to dance with.
Tonight on Blunt is the Halloween show.
We will be speaking with Holly Doggett, member of Spirits Alive, Portland, Maine History Preservers, and reenactors focused on Eastern Cemetery.
And later, David Micklejohn will join us to discuss his personal appreciation of Halloween and all that is scary, and Damnation Land, an annual film festival showcasing short horror films made in Maine, which he co-organized, founded, and has made a couple movies for. And also later in the show, we'll be speaking to former Blunt member and lover of Halloween, Jake Lichter, about the transition from youth Halloween to the Halloweens he currently experiences in college.
I'm Leah Germon.
And I am Isaac Woodbury. Hi. And this is the Halloween show on Blunt.
All right. Right now, we're talking with Holly Doggett. We're a member of Spirits Alive organization, a Portland, Maine nonprofit organization that is dedicated to preserving and protecting Eastern Cemetery. They do tours, storytelling, ceremonies, and projects. And just in case you're wondering, for those who are local, Eastern Cemetery is located at the base of Munjoy Hill.
So first of all, I would just like to ask you, why is it important to preserve history of cemeteries, in particular of Eastern Cemetery?
Well, the Eastern Cemetery is about 350 years old. And it's sort of like an outdoor museum. And we think that there was a reason that people buried their dead and memorialized them with the stones that they used and the carving and the art. And we feel like, just like any other museum, that we should preserve these artifacts for eternity.
Do you think preserving cemeteries is as important as preserving landmarks?
Cemeteries are landmarks. Actually, our cemetery is a National Historic Landmark. Since 1973.
Do you have any particular stories about people buried there or any notable residents?
Notable residents. We have so many residents. We have, it's almost, I think, 4,000 records of people buried there. And we have probably about 2,000 stones for those people. But yeah, we have many notable residents. A lot of the people that formed Portland are buried in that cemetery. It is the oldest historic landscape on the peninsula. So think about all the street signs you see in town, like Preble Street, Ting Street, Milk Street. All of those people with those last names are buried in that cemetery.
Right. So how old? You said 350 years old. Do you know of sort of the oldest grave or the oldest recorded person who was buried there?
The oldest recorded person with a tombstone is Mary Green, and that's from 1717. We actually think that her stone isn't that old. We think she's got a replacement stone.
Okay.
She's buried right next to her brother-in-law, mm-hmm. who was a captain. And their stones are very similar, even though he died later. And we have one other stone that's 1718, and that stone just looks like it's an older
yep.
stone. Plus, a lot of the headstones in Eastern Cemetery have companion footstones. So just like a bed, think about mm-hmm. a bed, a headboard, footboard. You've got a headstone and a footstone to sort of mark where the person was buried. Well, Mary Green's footstone is a different type of stone mm-hmm. than her headstone. So that kind of gives us another clue that it's possible that her headstone isn't actually not as old as her burial.
So I've actually been reading up on your website. There's the stone survey.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. It took us 4 years. We went through stone by stone, and we created a sheet for each stone, and we listed what we could read off of the stone, its size, what kind of condition it was in, and we sort of drew a little picture of the stone as it was on that day that we were going through so that we could get a contemporary map of what is left as far as stones go in the cemetery. There was an original survey done in 1890, but that was 200 years after the cemetery started. But 1890, again, was like over 100 years ago. So in the late 80s, William Jordan went in and he went through that plot map that was made, and he created a book of burials that supposedly was a more modern version of what was done in 1890. But nobody has ever gone in and written down exactly what's on every stone. We just know that Mary Green is buried in the cemetery, and we know what her death date is, but we don't know exactly what it says on her stone according to the book that he created. So mm-hmm. we started doing this survey, and like I said, it took 4 years. And now we've started taking pictures of every stone to go along with that paper survey. And we're also moving the paper information into a database so that mm-hmm. someday we'll have that online for people to be able to search.
Cool.
Wow.
And this is, I mean, you know, it being a cemetery and this being the Halloween show, there's sort of, you can't escape the spooky aspects of it. So are there anything paranormal or any, like, scary stories of people who are buried there or anything?
You know, I am not connected in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that kind of sensitivity to be able yep. to talk to the dead or even feel them around me. So of the hundreds of times I've been in the cemetery, I've never personally experienced it. But it's so funny, you'll be working in the cemetery and then somebody will just come up and they'll say, you know, they'll tell you their story, like, mm-hmm. I see spirits in here when I come in, and so-and-so was over there, and, you know, but, you know, I don't personally have mm-hmm. any stories. I like to think that the people that are buried there, the ghosts that might mm-hmm. accompany those people,
yep.
those ghosts are probably in places where those people lived when they were
alive.
Yeah,
that's what I always thought, is why ghosts would hang around with a bunch of other dead bodies in a cemetery when they had
exactly. But our spirits do come back once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And right now we're mm-hmm. having tours at night called
yep.
Walk Among the Shadows. And we have one on Halloween and one the day before Halloween. They start at 6:30,
mm-hmm.
and some of our residents do come back for that,
mm-hmm.
and they tell their stories. Right now, we have about 7 of them telling stories. They're all from around the Civil War, so they're telling their sad stories about those times.
So mm-hmm. they are historically accurate?
Yes. Yes, of course.
How do you know, though, officially?
We have the stories.
Well,
our organization does research on the people mm-hmm. before we pass the biographical information on to actors that are portraying the spirits.
I was wondering who do you hire as actors? Just people who are around in Portland?
Yeah, mm-hmm. local people.
Yep.
But we work with Acorn Productions.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I saw some stuff from them, yeah.
Yeah, they're great. They've been doing it about 3 years, at least 3, maybe 4 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're really professional. They're great. They're
and
really
then do
great.
You do, like, costuming, or do you do, like...
Yeah, they're dressed,
mm-hmm.
historically correct dress as much as they can, because they have to be really warm, so it's, like, historically correct coats.
Yeah. So, Yeah, I was wondering, how did you come up with the idea of doing the tours, and how long have you been doing them? So just how long have they existed?
This is our sixth year of doing them.
Yep.
They came about as partly a way for us to raise the money to do some work in the cemetery as far as conservation, but also we just want people in the community to know what's in there. There's so much history. And like I said, the founders of Portland are buried there. And
right.
We just really want to get the word out, and that's a good way to do it. We get a lot of comments back about, wow, I've never been in the cemetery before, but I'm definitely coming back now.
Yep.
And so it's a good way to expose people.
Yeah.
So do you work a lot with the younger generations then to teach them the history of it?
Yeah, we do. We don't have any specifically child-oriented tours right now. That's something that we would like to do. But yeah, we have had, actually we have gardening days too, and we've had a lot of younger people come in and help out with that too. And just gardening around the stones. I mean, they're historic stones. So you have to be extra careful, and you learn about them, and you just, you know, you just happen to learn about the people that are there when you're in there working. Because you're just like, what is this about? Who died at sea, or who was hanged, or...
Yeah.
It's interesting.
That sounds like it would be very cool to sort of have, like, an updated, you know, resource list of all the people and sort of, like... I mean, that's the cool thing is, like, do you work at all with Maine Historical Society or any of the other...
Yeah, we do.
Yep.
Yeah, especially Jamie Kingman over in the library. She does a lot of work with us, and they help us a lot when we're doing research.
Yep.
Yeah, we love Maine Historical.
So I'd just like to remind everybody that this is indeed a call-in show. We will be having some more phone guests later, but if you'd like to talk to any of the guests or share any, you know, anecdotes about Halloween,
personal stories,
any of your favorite costumes, any memories, call us at 780-4909.
That is 780-4909.
And so we're still speaking with Holly Doggett from the Eastern Cemetery. What is it? Sorry.
Spirits Alive.
Spirits Alive, right. So another question I had is, do you ever experience, you know, like, ecological degradation of the stones, or like vandalism, or any sort of threats to the preservation of the cemetery?
Yeah, I mean, it's an outdoor space,
right.
So of course everything is subject to the elements. So yeah, I mean, the marble stones that we have, we have a lot of slate stones, a lot of marble stones, and then a few granite stones. But the marble stones in particular are susceptible to damage. I mean, they're just pollution and water runoff are big problems for the marble. People started with slate stones, and then these marble stones came into being. And oh, these beautiful white marble stones. Don't you want a marble stone for your loved one?
Right.
You know, you can imagine they're trying to sell this marble, and I'm sure it was beautiful at the time. And so they have these huge monuments made of marble, but now they're unreadable.
Right.
And a lot of them are. And, you know, if they had only known, would they have ever done that? Because the slate stones, many of them, people will look at them and say, oh, my gosh, is this new?
Yeah.
Because they are so crisp and...
They hold up.
Yeah.
And then I'm just wondering, is it sort of just, you know, part of, like, the nature of the beast, or is there anything you can do to protect the cemetery from, not only just from kind of, like, natural, but also from vandalism or sort of, like, human error of
taking care of
them? Well,
we were thinking of building a glass dome over the entire 6 acres.
That sounds...
There we go.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's got a fence around it.
Yep.
And it's closed at dusk and locked. You know, there's not really much you can do about sun and rain. And, you know, they weren't meant to be there forever. They're stone.
Yeah.
And
do you experience much vandalism of the stones themselves? Because it seems to me like that's sort of like, I can't really imagine who would think, even among the vandals in the community, who would kind of... Seems like you know, people's cars, houses, and cemeteries are sort of like this line that you
don't cross.
You know, vandalism has been documented in the cemetery since the 1800s.
Yeah, yep.
And I'm sure it happens. I think that a lot of the damage that we see in stones that fall or are gone, actually, the stones are probably, a lot of them are underground. the cemetery is very uneven, and there's a lot of erosion going on there. I think it's a lot less vandalism anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. What do you do when stones really break, though?
Well, it depends. It depends on the type of break. It depends on what condition the stone is in. A lot of the marble stones are in such poor condition that there's not really a lot you can do for them. But, for example, if one of the slates was to break, it depends on the break, but you could actually mortar the stone back together. You can pin it with metal pins. So, it just depends on what's going on.
Well, you were saying that this about the stone survey that you have been working on for 4 years, so you do have an accurate portrayal of the number of stones in the cemetery itself, so that kind of implies that people cannot be buried there anymore. You can't have plots there anymore?
Yep. The cemetery's been closed since 1858 for further burials.
Yep. Wow.
Yeah.
And this is a question I have, which you very well may say no to, but if so, just say no. But
no, you cannot be buried there.
Can I have a special?
Can I have a special place?
Are there any unsolved mysteries about anybody buried there that you know of?
Mysteries as to where they're buried?
As to where they're buried or the circumstances of their death or anything of that nature.
Oh, that's a good
question.
Again,
it's sort of a hopeful question, but I figured I would ask.
You know, a lot of people, there's a record for them being buried there, but we don't know where they are.
Right.
Just because you're buried there doesn't necessarily mean you have a stone that says you're buried there.
Yep.
So there is a lot of that.
Yeah.
People will do a lot of genealogy work, and they'll see their relatives buried there, but they'll see in the record no stone or gravesite lost.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a lot of that.
That's pretty interesting, though.
There were a lot of what they called strangers buried in the cemetery. Mm-hmm. There was a whole area for strangers, and strangers were people that didn't have any money, didn't know anybody that could afford to bury them. So there was a stranger's
That's
ground.
Really
interesting. We're not sure where that is.
Mm-hmm.
So that is
supposed to have a secret.
Yeah.
Well, I was just wondering. I mean, it's like, do you know geographically why the cemetery was built there in the first place? Because I always imagine cemeteries as being like, you know, they're sort of constructed where there's, like, a lot of land to bury people in. And is it sort of now that there's a lot built around that it seems like a really small, enclosed space? Or do you know, like, why that was chosen in the beginning?
You know, one of our founders was George Cleves. And supposedly, when he died, he was buried behind his home. Mm-hmm. And his home was down by the water, down the hill. So if you're looking at the gate of the cemetery out at Casco Bay, his land was down that slope. Mm-hmm. And so supposedly that is just where they started burying people, and it started to move up toward Congress Street.
Huh.
And then, you know, eventually the town grew up around it
right.
and sort of enclosed it.
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, the cemetery, what we consider the back part of the cemetery, is the oldest part of the cemetery. In 1795, there was a Reverend Smith that owned the property in front of the cemetery, and that's when there was this little road was built. They called Funeral Lane, which is from the gates on Congress Street. You make a left, and then there are gates on Mountford Street. That was called Funeral Lane, and that allowed people to get into the cemetery. And it was on his deathbed that he finally agreed to deed the rest of the land to the city for a cemetery, because it was getting a little full.
I was also searching again on your website that you were preserving a Victorian shed.
Yes,
called
the
Dead House. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah.
It's a little vague.
So when you go in the gates from Congress Street, on the right is a little white shed. It's a Gothic in style little shed. Now that shed, inside that shed is how you get to the city tomb, which is where they used to hold bodies during the winter because they couldn't dig. So they had to have a place to store them. That little shed is now used as sort of a gardening shed. So, and we put our, you know, papers in there and that sort of thing.
Yep.
So that shed, as part of the city's budget, is going to be rehabilitated. If you've been in there, you'd notice that all the shingles are coming off of it. Mm-hmm. So, and they're going to redo the foundation.
Do you know how the cemetery as a whole ranks among, like, oldest Portland landmarks?
Yes.
Because it seems like an old one compared to what I know still is standing or still exists.
It's the oldest public landscape in Portland.
Okay, yeah.
Oldest cemetery, oldest mm-hmm. municipal cemetery, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if you'll know this either, but do you know, like, what the population or the rough population of Portland was when it was first...
Oh, that's
people
a really
started
good question.
Burying, or sort of how developed the township was.
Well, 1668.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty early.
I mean, that was before. Yeah, that was very early.
So two things. I'd like to remind everybody that this is indeed a call-in show. Again, our phone number is 780-4909. That's 780-4909. And if you have anything to say, ask our guest a question, talk about Halloween, share a story, a memory, anything. Just give us a call. And I believe we have a feature from a Blunt member, Matthew Osman, which we'll listen to now. But before we do, I'd just like to remind everybody that our guest has been Holly Doggett. And thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
Actually did not expect to be so interested in
this. Is fantastic.
That was wonderful.
I'll come back and talk more.
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
I am 17 and a half. And I have outgrown trick-or-treating. I do not like it anymore, but I like to see other kids trick-or-treating because it reminds me when I used to go out and trick-or-treat when I was younger. Are you too old for trick-or-treating, or have you outgrown it?
I think that I'm still okay to trick-or-treat, you know, any age, as long as you're in costume.
I am not too old for trick-or-treating. I will never outgrow it.
I have outgrown it.
Nah, you're never too old for trick-or-treating. You're never too old for trick-or-treating.
I'll trick-or-treat all day, man.
Nah. One more year of trick-or-treating for me, because it's 2 days before my 18th birthday.
I think I'm too old for it now.
Actually, I do like trick-or-treating. It's fun, because I like seeing other kids dressing up, and it's cool to see kids seeing different kind of costumes that they have. And I like giving out candy to kids.
Yes, I am, because I'm 52. I have outgrown it.
And anything else you want to add to that?
Well, I liked it when my kids were young so that I could go out. It gave me an excuse to go out to trick-or-treat.
Are you too old for trick-or-treating, or you outgrown it?
I don't know. I'm just too old for it. Uh-huh. When you're too old, that means you have to follow the rules to know you can't go there.
Are you too old for trick-or-treating, or you outgrown it?
I don't think I'm too old to trick-or-treat. I have kids, so I only trick-or-treat with my kids. I don't trick-or-treat by myself because I'm pretty old.
Can you give another reason why you might be too old for trick-or-treating?
I just feel like if you are an adult and you are married and you have children, and you should let people who are younger get all the treats. If I go trick-or-treating, I'm taking away treats that someone younger could possibly eat. I would take their treat.
Instead of me going out to trick-or-treating, I will be handing out the Halloween candy to the trick-or-treaters. Whether you go trick-or-treating or stay home to pass out the candy, I hope you have a happy Halloween. This is Matt Osman reporting from Blunt Youth Radio WMPG.
And welcome back to Blunt Youth Radio. It's the Halloween show.
Ooh! We have a new guest with us.
Hello,
David.
Welcome to the show.
The guest is David Micklejohn.
Hi, thanks for having me.
He is joining us on Blunt, I believe, for the second time.
Third time.
Wow. Well, he's a Portland, Maine filmmaker. He's also the co-founder of Damnation Land, would you say?
Yeah, sounds right.
And a lifelong lover of scary things.
That's true.
Movies.
Very
and
true.
Whatnot. Halloween,
Halloween, yeah, absolutely. I grew up watching horror films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is perfect, because our first question for you is, what was the first scary movie you remember watching?
Oh, I remember, this is so bad, I remember being maybe 10 or 11, and mm-hmm. my parents had me. We watched Psycho, the Alfred Hitchcock film.
Oh goodness!
And there's a really scary scene in the shower that terrified me so much. And
yeah.
I would not take a shower for about a week unless like my mother was. I would make my mom come and sit in the bathroom while I was taking a shower because I was so scared to be alone. I would make her like talk to me while I was in the shower.
I actually remember having that exact same experience, not because of the movie, but because you already told me that story. Because when I was like 10, I had that exact same experience.
Oh no, I'm sorry. Remember,
but not that I made my mom come in.
Yeah, scary things.
Take a shower with me or anything.
They perpetuate things, go on and on like
it's,
that.
Yeah.
How many listeners are probably going to be scared to go in the shower after hearing this?
I don't know. We could probably find out if one of them would give us a call, because you should call us if you have anything to say about Halloween.
Questions, comments, phone number stories.
Is 780-4909, 780-4909. And yeah, you know, the Halloween show. It doesn't get much better than this at Blunt Youth Radio or at WMPG or on the radio ever. This is it. The creme de la creme, so to speak.
Those are straight facts right there.
Yeah. Let's see. When were you first overwhelmed by something being scary? Because I definitely have a distinct memory of being too scared. To the point where it was no longer fun and I was just wanted to, like...
Leave.
Just hide. And I was, like... Actually, what I remember is that I read a book. And it was one of those, like, scariest stories collections that you got from the school library.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a book. And the story... It was a short story, which was... Three girls are, like, walking home from school through the woods, and it's that classic thing where they see, like, an old lady washing some bloody clothes, and it's, like, she, like, turns around, disappears, and then they all learn they're going to die in a week.
Mm-hmm.
But the descriptions of how they died were so, like, visceral, but also really realistic, and, like, you could totally, I don't know. One of them, the girl, so, like, there's a snowstorm, and the lights go out, and she's, like, has asthma, and she's, like, going all over the way looking for her, like, or she has a cough or something. She's looking for cough medicine. She drinks cough medicine. And then the lights turn back on, and it's nail polish. And then she, like, her throat, like, closes up, and she dies because she, like, suffocates.
So it really became no longer fun.
Yeah, and then I was, like, so scared that I was going to make that same mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, like, go in my bathroom, and, like, I was taking, like, some Advil or something, and I would, like, look at it, like, a million times to make sure that, I don't know. It was just, like, that story when I was in, like, elementary school haunted me forever.
Right. Yeah, I think something that you'll see in a lot of horror films especially is like I think the scarier things are more successful when you leave it to people's imaginations to do the work
for
you. Like, you know, the kind of golden rule is never show the monster, because the monster that people are imagining is always scarier than whatever thing you can show on screen.
Right.
I know that I think for me that's why, like, growing up I was always really afraid of the dark, and I always had to sleep with some kind of, not a light in my room, but like a light outside, because I grew up in the woods and the woods were really dark, and then my room was in the basement of our house, and it was really dark, and when there was no light, my imagination would just go wild, and I would think about every scary thing that I've ever thought in my entire life.
Right.
And it would all exist at the exact same time in my mind in that moment. And
in
it
that
was
room.
Just terrifying. Yeah, exactly.
I remember the exact same experience. I think the first time when I was really overwhelmed by something scary was, I think I was in third grade, and I was reading Goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
I was seeing how many I could read before I got so freaked out that I couldn't handle it anymore. And the first one I read, I kind of stopped because it was about werewolves. And at the time, that was terrifying to me because I saw the Harry Potter movie where the werewolf appeared. And I just got so freaked out that I just started thinking that, oh, my goodness, there are werewolves everywhere and you don't know who they are. So I just completely freaked out.
Yeah,
it was terrifying.
For me, like when I was growing up, I was more afraid of monsters, but now I'm kind of more afraid of humans.
Yeah,
like you know, like the movies that scare me the most are the ones like about the apocalypse and mob mentality takes over and people just start being really horrible to each other out
that's
of survival.
More realistic, like,
that's kind of I think that's kind of why that short story was so scary. It's because it wasn't like the girl that drank nail polish wasn't murdered, and this is kind of similar. She wasn't like murdered or abducted or like anything like that. She just like made a mistake, and
which
she died because of it. And that's like so spooky to me.
Yeah,
like that was real. That's probably like the scariest G-rated scary story. I mean, it's probably just because of when I read it, but that story still just spooks me.
We're all one swallow away from drinking nail polish.
We're all just one snowstorm. Before we have to go to break in a couple minutes.
1 minute.
1 minute. But I'd like to remind everyone that we're speaking with David Micklejohn. Do you want to? How would you intro yourself, Portland filmmaker?
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker from town.
from Portland? Not from Portland.
No, no, I live in Portland.
Currently living in
yeah.
Portland. Let's talk a little bit about where you're from. A little town in the woods.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I grew up in Acton, Maine, which is right on the border of New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. It's a small town, maybe like 1,000 or 2,000 people. When I was there, we had one store.
Yep.
I lived on a dirt road with a lot of woods. One neighbor that we knew who was maybe like, you know, through the woods a ways, but no one really around. We had a lot of woods everywhere. And it was really like, it was kind of a quintessential Maine upbringing, you know, deep woods. We had a wood stove, no cable.
Yeah.
I had a friend who would videotape. She would record MTV on her VCR and then give me the tape. And that's how I would watch MTV growing up, you know. It was deep woods.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's it. When we get back, we will talk about perhaps the spookier aspects of Acton, Maine,
okay.
if we're lucky, mm-hmm. and more. This is Blunt Youth Radio. I'm Isaac Woodbury High.
I'm Melania Germont.
And our engineers are Anthony and Christian tonight. I think they're going to play us some Lou Reed and maybe read the weather.
Sunday morning brings the dawn in. It's just a restless feeling by my side. Early dawning Sunday morning. It's just the wasted years so close behind. Watch out, the world's behind you. There's always someone around you who will call. It's nothing at all. Sunday morning, and I'm falling. I've got a feeling I don't want to know.
And now, the weather. Tonight, mostly clear, lows in the mid-20s. Northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, with gusts up to 25 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Tuesday, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 40s, light and variable winds becoming west around 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night, mostly clear in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy, lows in the lower 30s, light and variable winds. And finally, on Wednesday, mostly cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny. Highs in the mid-40s, light and variable winds becoming west around 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. You're listening to WMPG and W281AC, Gorham, Portland.
Welcome back to the Halloween show.
Welcome.
Boo. We have a guest on the telephone, Jake Lichter, Blunt alumnus and Halloween man. Hello.
Jake, you there? All right.
I can hear the familiar phone
static.
Phone static, but
all right. Apparently not.
Give him a call again, Engineer Anthony. I bet he just hung up out of boredom, lack of patience.
All right. Welcome back to the show.
Well, we're still with David,
Hi.
And he's all right. So I guess we can keep going. Let's see.
Welcome back to I'd also like to mention that this is a call-in show. Call in with questions, comments, questions for our lovely guest at 780-4909. That is 780-4909. And we are back.
So, David, before this interview began, we were talking, and you told me the very beginning of the story, and you should finish that. Or start that over for everyone regarding a familiar costume. But wait.
Oh, first, seems like Jake Lichter. Hello.
Jake Lichter.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Hi. Blind Youth Radio homies.
Hi, Jake.
Hey, hi, Jake.
Welcome back. You're speaking with David Micklejohn, too.
Hi.
Oh, my God. David Micklejohn's on the phone?
Yeah. Hi, Jake.
He's in studio.
He's in studio.
It's amazing.
Jake, tell us about Spooktober really briefly. Give us, like, the sentence definition.
I'd love to tell you about Spooktober. Spooktober is, like, instead of just celebrating Halloween on one day, why not celebrate it every day?
Oh, goodness.
And celebrate it too much and go over the top with everything that you do involving Halloween, because Halloween is more than just a holiday that takes place over one night. Halloween's a state of mind, and that's what Spooktober is all about.
It sounds like Portland, Maine was a cool town to have Halloween adventures in.
Portland, Maine is a wonderful town to have Halloween adventures in.
What's one of your most memorable Halloween adventures in Portland, Maine?
Halloween adventure. I don't know, there was one night, like, maybe, like, a week before Halloween, we were all in, like, the cemetery really late at night, and, like, for some reason, somebody called the police, and, like, the police came and, like, came into the cemetery to, like, try to find us, and so we all had to, like, run and hide, and it was, like, this, like, big crazy deal, and it was, like, really spooky, and then we, like, hid in the middle of the woods. And it was just like a classic spooky adventure.
That sounds like
Evergreen
something.
Cemetery is the perfect place to have spooky adventures.
Did you play dead?
Did I play dead? I dug a hole real quick and got in that.
Smart.
What do you prefer more? The childhood, like eat candy, get sick, go trick or treating, hang out with your
parents.
Family, Halloween, or the adolescent, independent freedom? Halloween?
Oh man. It's a difficult question because I like to just encompass the best aspects of both. Like,
right.
Like eating candy so much that you get sick is like definitely an important part of it. Like that's the story of last Friday for me. But there's also like the aspect of like mischief and like smashing things,
right.
Scaring people and watching like scary movies and like having a weird time and like doing things that are like to make you uncomfortable and scared. But also like having like the classic like family like decorating your front lawn with a big skeleton hanging out of a tree and like all that classic stuff.
What is
so, I mean,
it?
Like, you got to find a balance.
What's it been like at college? Is it? I mean, I imagine it's closer to the Spooktobers of yonder. But do you feel like it's different because you're not in your hometown? You're not.
Oh, yeah.
Walking down the streets,
definitely.
You remember.
It's like all kids here too. Like. It's just, there's no adults anywhere. It's all just, like, it's all people from age 17 to 22 in, like, a big, big farm. So, like, Halloween is, like, it was, like, it already happened to an extent. Like, basically, like, Halloween's over here. Like, it already happened, even though it didn't happen. Hampshire Halloween is, like, a huge deal. It's, like, they get, like, they hire a bunch of bands, and there's fireworks, and, like, everyone goes, like, really crazy. And they had so much candy. I ate so much candy. Because no one was interested in candy, because they were like, let's go party. And I was like, let's go eat candy. So I just ate, like, so many, like, fun-sized Snickers bars. They had a lot of those. And not so much candy corn. I didn't have very much candy corn until tonight. But then there was some dude walking around with a pumpkin full of candy corn, and I ate. I just had, like, a huge handful.
I ate candy corn for the first time in a while, but it wasn't called candy corn. It was called giant corn, and it's
called what corn?
Giant corn.
Giant corn.
But it's the same thing.
It was
candy
made,
corn.
It was made by Jelly Belly.
It's made by Jelly Belly.
That's
beans,
really.
And that's weird. I don't trust Jelly Belly.
A third of them are chocolate. A third of them are cinnamon, and a third of them are normal candy corn. And it's giant corn
weird.
Mix.
Mm-hmm. If you're ever in Rite Aid, get some of the Brock's Mellow Cream. Pumpkins, like they're
okay.
Like, all right.
They're dope. They're
super
dope.
Yeah. I don't know. What about autumnal things? It sounds like Hampshire is pretty picturesque.
Hampshire is so picturesque. You have no idea.
Is it a good setting for autumnal
it's
adventures?
So spooky. Like the woods, like the trees, all red and brown and yellow, and there's pumpkins everywhere.
Like blood.
People are trying to smash the pumpkins, though.
Yeah.
But and it's like really spooky at night.
I've got one more question for you, on a totally different topic now. Before we let you go.
Yeah.
So, you know, you may have heard of colleges, groups of people, sort of like forward-thinking dudes putting more emphasis nowadays on rethinking Halloween stereotypes, such as, you know, appropriating Native American culture and wearing a headdress as a costume. Is that discussed at all on Hampshire?
Oh,
I understand Hampshire campus as being a pretty...
so much.
Yeah, that's what I
imagine.
You
could
even
say that it was discussed into the ground. You could say that I'm disgusted with all the discussion. No, I'm not. It was like so much an issue. Not only that, like there was this one band that Hampshire Halloween's committee hired to play that played Afrobeat music, but the members of the band were predominantly white, and somebody called the Hampshire Halloween community page out on it, and then like there was this whole big argument, and like members of the band got involved, and they're like, you don't know us, you don't know us, and then like they had to cancel the band, and now it's like being posted all over the internet, like liberal arts college cancels band for being too white. So like, yeah, it's like a serious thing here.
That's pretty. What do you think would have happened if you decided to dress up as a sexy Native American?
Oh, you just get like publicly shamed and yelled at.
Huh. Well, it's been really wonderful.
Just like stay away from it.
And you know, I have to say, Halloween Spooktober time here is really not the same without you. We all miss you.
Well, as long as you're keeping Oakdale spooky.
Yeah, Oakdale's pretty. It's been pretty spooky. Actually, some really spooky thing happened, which I'll tell really briefly, which is that I came across a dead possum, which was like cut open and like
Portland.
And like it was like freshly dead, and it looked like someone had just cut it down the middle because it was all bloody and it was all like just split open. And I do not understand how that would have happened naturally without somebody using a knife to cut it open. So that's the scariest
thing
that's happened.
All right, wow. Did Damnation Land happen already?
Damnation Land did happen. It was lovely. You would have enjoyed it.
It's still happening, just not in Portland.
Right. The main event has come and gone. Mm-hmm. But we do have a caller, and thank you so much, Jake, for being on the air.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
And see you later.
See ya.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you. So we have Matt from Cumberland on the line.
Yes, hello.
Hey, hello.
Hi, I heard what you were saying before about the movie that made you do silly things, and I had a similar story to that.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Do you ever see that 1950s movie, The Blob, about that scary blob that ate everything?
I know all about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when I was a kid, I watched that movie, and it just scared the living daylights out of me. And for the next, like, 3 or 4 months, I slept with salt next to my bed, because my mom said that was the only thing that would kill it. So yeah. I would sleep with salt in case I woke up, and it was in my bed, and I had to kill it with salt.
Just in case.
So just figured I would let you guys know that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
A good technique.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we're back with just David Mickeljohn in the booth.
So speaking of salt, I just watched the movie Hocus Pocus last night.
Oh, really?
I've never seen about the three witches. Three witches that come back from the dead to haunt suburbia in this town. I can't remember where it is, but it's the 20th anniversary of that movie. So we watched it. I watched it with some friends a couple nights ago, and they use salt too. You pour a circle of salt around you, and that'll protect you from magic.
Mm-hmm.
No one can steal you from a circle of salt. So
basically, you should keep salt on us at all times.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Just to be safe. To all our listeners, keep salt with you.
Always.
Safe from magic.
Keep it in the anti-evil utility belt that you wear.
I wonder what other advice people might have for...
Oh, that's a good question.
Keeping monsters at bay.
I know how somebody could you know, tell us that. Maybe join the conversation.
Give us a
like
call.
Matt did.
Mm-hmm.
Follow his example by calling us at 780-4909. That is 780-4909. Because this is
it's a real public service you're offering people.
Yeah, the opportunity to tell me how to not be eaten by monsters this Halloween
and
season.
And letting everyone know how to stay safe.
And also, I mean, I don't know, so we need your advice.
We need your
salt, I guess. I mean, garlic. A gun is also...
garlic.
A sword.
I feel like there's a lot of hearsay about what works. I've never used garlic against a vampire.
I've also never used a gun.
Have you heard
it
works against a vampire? Is that why?
No. No. Okay. But I guess maybe the garlic does work because I like garlic.
Yeah,
so.
I Let's talk about more scary movies now. How do you think horror movies have changed as a genre since you remember watching them as a kid?
Well, like I was saying before, I think they show the monsters a little more than before.
Yep.
Like, especially there's this movie called The Haunting, mm-hmm. which came out, the new version came out like 8 years ago, but the old one's from black and white classic
right.
days. In the old one, it's just all sound. It's just like creaking doorways and like mm-hmm. you see shadows of things, but you never see the things. And it was so terrifying. The new one, they have all these like CGI smoke with eyeballs. And it's like, I don't know, it's like it comes out a little campy, which
yeah.
is fun for a much different
yeah,
reason.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just not as
yep.
scary as the older ones.
Yep. So, yeah, that actually reminds me, speaking of, oh, we've got a caller. Karen from Portland. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to add my 2 cents about the Blob movie just being the scariest thing I'd ever seen.
Okay.
I never used salt, but I like taking that hint there. I also want to say, if it's Dave, your guest there about Psycho, that I'm now in my 50s, but when I was in my 30s, I knew a woman who was in her 40s who still would not take a shower. She would
right.
only
oh
take
goodness.
A bath.
Why would, huh, I don't, that seems strange because you're...
I'm sorry, not from The Blob, from Psycho.
Right,
from
yeah, Psycho. But you're almost more susceptible to being attacked in the bath because you're lying down, but...
You might think that, but at least I think she could hear.
Huh, oh, I see.
Yeah, you can keep the curtain
yeah,
open.
That's true.
Keep the
yeah,
curtain
yeah.
open, too.
Yep.
You could keep the shower curtain pulled.
I can understand that. That's pretty amazing.
Anyway, so no crystal balls on, like, how to help. Otherwise, just use positive light. But
okay.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out.
That's a good
Thanks.
One. Thank you. Thank you
Thank
very
you
much.
So much.
Yeah. And don't watch Psycho.
And also, yeah, never
watch
apparently, don't watch Psycho unless Hopefully. You want to suffer extensive psychological trauma forever.
And if you want to be like Carrie, you can call us with your questions,
yeah.
comments, or stories on how to protect monsters at 780.
And more than that, too. I think that's a very specific thing to ask people to call for. Do you
right.
have any thoughts about Halloween, which probably everybody listening to the show does because
mm-hmm.
it's the
Halloween
season.
Halloween.
Give us a call. Oh, and I would also like to remind everybody that half of the reason that David Mickeljohn is with us is because he co-founded something called Damnation Land, which is very cool.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Damnation Land.
Well, a few years ago, some friends of mine and I, we wanted to do something to get our friends who are local filmmakers to all work together on some collaborative project. So my friend Eddie Bowles is one of the co-founders, and Alan Baldwin is the other one. We all worked out this idea where main filmmakers would make a short horror film, and then we'd screen them together in one big hullabaloo. And mm-hmm. We did that 4 years ago, and we've been doing it every year right around Halloween. So we just had the world premiere on last Friday? No.
Thursday.
Last Thursday. No, it wasn't last Friday. It was
it not last Thursday?
Yeah, it was last Friday.
Right.
Yeah, it was last Friday.
Okay.
Or maybe two Fridays ago. Oh, yeah, it was the 18th
mm-hmm.
or 19th. It was great. And we're doing more screenings this week. So we do
yep.
a big premiere in Portland because a lot of the filmmakers are from around here.
Mm-hmm.
But we have screenings in Bridgeton and Lewiston and Brunswick this week and Halloween and all coming up to it. So damnationland.com. We have 5 really great films by local
mm-hmm.
filmmakers this year. And all the films are original. They've never been screened before Damnation Land. They're made specifically for Damnation Land. So it's really cool to see how much original creative work can come mm-hmm. out of a
yeah,
small community of filmmakers.
I was just going to ask, when you first envisioned this or when, you know, you're kind of like assisting in this vision being created, did you
mm-hmm.
imagine it being tamer or kind of spookier than the end result films have turned out the last few years?
Oh, the thing I love about it is that there's no control. Like,
right, yeah.
Like, it's really up to the filmmakers to make
mm-hmm.
whatever they think is scary to them. And so I made a film...
So it's a very personal thing.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, this year, for whatever reason, 3 of the films were about addiction, and then
yep.
one of them was
oh,
about, like, drug use in a certain way, and then one of them was about something totally different. But it's,
yeah.
like, there are certain
things... There isn't any collaboration between people. It just kind of happens, like...
Each team is responsible for their own film, mm-hmm. and so... You never know what's going to happen. And that's what I love about it is the diversity of
yeah.
styles, the diversity of visions is really interesting
and,
to see.
Yeah, and it's also like it seems like it's all still held up by the quality of the work. So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is
I
very
actually
cool,
wanted to ask something for my brother, Luke. Shout out to Luca. But do you have any advice for an aspiring movie maker? Because I have a 11-year-old brother at home who would be very grateful for some advice.
Yeah.
For short films.
Yeah. Just get your hands dirty. Just like I remember when Isaac first started making movies himself, he just got a camera and started making films with Anthony, one of the engineers. They made serial killer films. Like, they just grab a camera and just start making them. And I love that, because the biggest thing is never to give up. You know,
yep.
there's no obstacle that you will come across when you're working on a movie that you can't figure out if you just think creatively about it. And Isaac's a great testament to that, because he came up with a lot of ridiculous things. He made a zombie film, made a bunch of serial killer films, made a film with a big rabbit, like all these weird things, and he just did it because he wanted to. And
yeah.
I think I may be most scared of the rabbit
of all them.
List.
Yeah,
sure.
And, you know, that's actually something we were talking about, is kind of like what makes a movie scary, or what makes an element of a movie spooky or creepy, or like.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were saying not revealing the monster.
Yeah, I think that's and kind of like, I mean, there's always this whole idea of the like the plausible versus the sort of like the outlandish. And then on the totally opposite end of the spectrum, there's like super campy, bloody, like weird movies. Like, I, for example, I was watching this movie last night called Videodrome.
Oh yeah,
and it's like it's super spooky, and it's very effective because of how outlandish a lot of it is. But then it's also like some of it is kind of plausible and sort of relevant culturally and whatnot. And I think that's kind of a good mix.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of different types of scares. There's like a shock scare, which is about doing like really like surprising things. There's also like the gory kind of cringe stuff. Like I saw the new remake of Evil Dead 2, and there's a part where this woman like cuts her tongue down the middle, and it's just like so gory to look at. It can't, like, there's a cringe kind of fear where you don't want to watch. I personally like the shock ones more. Like, there's this filmmaker named Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who's made a bunch of like J-horror films. This is like this genre, Japanese horror films. And his films are always so, like, jumpy. It's like everything goes quiet, and there's, like, somebody moving, and then it just totally will surprise you. That's my favorite kind of film to watch, because they have to surprise. They have to surprise people, and that's always fun.
But you're also saying that possibly there's some, like, what would be some really overused things in horror films that wouldn't make it as scary anymore, that they're so just used so often?
Like, I don't know, Evil Priest. like
zombies.
Like disturbing children saying precocious, like ominous things. I don't know. There's a lot of things get overused, but
mean they're not scary.
It doesn't mean they're
not
scary. Yeah, yeah. It's.
I think it is. Yeah.
I think you know, if you study the form of anything too much, you'll see it's overused. Like, if you look at music, pick your favorite song. It's probably just three chords repeated over and over again. But that doesn't make the song less emotionally powerful to you. You know. Mm-hmm. Because it's the execution of those things that is where the real style and the creativity comes out. It's not just the fact on paper that there's this malicious priest. Like, that itself is not scary to think of, but when you see it in the full picture, it's
so
definitely can be scary.
I think we have another feature to play before the show ends. I just want to make sure we get time to do that. So I believe we have Naoki's feature still to play. But before that,
we do.
All right, groovy. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Hello, this is Naoki, and I just turned 28 years old a month ago. And surprisingly, this is the second Halloween for me. Guess what? It's because I came from Japan only for this semester, and I've been in Seattle 7 years ago. So, I didn't think Halloween in the United States would be this big event before I came here first. Actually, it's getting more and more common to wear a costume on Halloween in Japan, but it's only for university students or young people in big cities. Families with kids don't do trick-or-treat. So I asked why Halloween was such a big event here and brought out these responses mostly from American students in University of Southern Maine.
Well, I think Halloween became a big deal in the United States because it was the combination of many different holidays. So, for example, there were celebrations held in Mexico and in Europe that celebrated the deceased. It's kind of like Bon Festival in Japan. And then eventually, the United States picked up the idea of celebrating the day when people passed away and honoring their memory. and combining it with traditional festivals that involved costumes and games and playing, and they created it into one holiday. And the reason they did that was because it became a very popular time of year for people to celebrate, and also a lot of the advertising companies wanted to be able to sell more candy and sweets, so it became a kind of commercial holiday in the United States.
I'm going to interview Aiden, who is from England, about what's Halloween like in England and why Halloween is such a big event in the United States. So, Aiden, what's it like in England?
Well, it's definitely not as big as it is here. Definitely not. Halloween in England, there's similar concepts going on. There's a bit of trick or treating going around. A few pumpkins here and there. I guess it's just exactly the same as America, but toned down, like, you know, 200%. some kids get into it, but it's more, as you get to an adult, it's more about dressing up for that one night and going out clubbing or whatever. Tends to be what it's more about. Just, I guess, an excuse to get drunk. if English people need that. Yeah.
Okay, so compared to the one in England, Halloween in the United States is much bigger. So why is it such a big event in the United States? What do you think?
Personally, my opinion would be that America is very commercialized, and that encourages events or festivals such as Halloween. From a kind of capitalist kind of point of view. But also, I think Americans do really enjoy just the themes, I guess, that Halloween bring, and just the excitement that it brings.
Honestly, to me, I don't very much see Halloween as a big event. I mean, it's a great chance for kids to go out and pretend to be monsters and, you know, get candy, you know, tricks, get some treats. It's great to prank a few friends, a few neighbors, but honestly, it's a little kid's thing, and I grew out of it a long time ago. It's nice to have the kids go out and have fun. I guess that would be the real reason why people find it such a big deal. But for me, it's not really a big thing anymore.
So, you haven't done Halloween things since when?
I haven't done anything for Halloween since 2005.
Oh.
So, why don't you have a fun in Halloween anymore?
I'm just busy. You know, school, life, sometimes even sleep. There's always more important things. Sometimes I just hang out with friends on the spare time, but it's just not a big thing to decorate the house with spooky decorations. I mean, I still pass out candy for the kids that come by, but other than that, I don't really celebrate it.
Okay. Why Halloween in the United States is such a big event? So, what do you think?
Hi. It's a very interesting question. I wish I knew a little bit more about it, but from what I could, what I can imagine, what I think, is that Halloween is rooted in Western Christianity doctrine and paganism and some beliefs around witchcraft. And so I think it started from this Western Christian thought and tradition around celebrating this time of year, and it really took off, and kids loved it. And as you probably know, I'm sure most of us know, the most favorite part of the Halloween tradition is to dress in costumes and trick-or-treat, but there are other ways to celebrate it as well. Bobbing for apples, bonfires, Halloween parties, haunted houses, things like that. But I think it's been a tradition that's been around for a long time, and something that the kids just loved and bought into, and it became part of our tradition and holiday here in the United States. Interesting to think about it not happening in other parts of the world and not being such a common practice.
So basically, Halloween started by traditional reasons such as Christianity and witchcraft, but it's getting bigger and bigger for commercial reasons. Since they wanted people to spend more money on Halloween, they've advertised it like Christmas and Valentine's Day. This is Naoki reporting from Black News Radio.
Hello, and I'm welcome back.
Thank you to Naoki for that feature. And we are still the Halloween show, still Blunt Youth Radio, and we still have David Mickeljohn for about another minute.
Hi.
I have one more question for him.
Hit me.
What, and obviously answer this as shortly as possible, but what is something that you have never seen in a horror film before in your whole life?
Oh, something I've never seen in a horror film before?
What's something that you don't think you've ever seen in a scary movie?
Or would like to see.
Oh, I was going to say unicorns, but then Cabin in the Woods did unicorns justice.
It.
So glad. I'm so glad. That was on my checklist. Not a narwhal. I've never seen a narwhal in a horror film.
And a follow-up to that is, if you were to make a horror movie right now, what's one thing you'd want to make sure you included in it?
A big murder scene at a local university radio station.
Oh.
With that, I think that's the show, because we're going to go die.
Hi. I'm Leah Jermon.
I was Isaac Woodbury. Hi, and now I am buried in the Eastern Cemetery with all the spooky old people from the days of yonder.
We'll see you there.
All right. This has been Blunt Youth Radio, and next up, we're going to listen to some jazz tunes from Bob.